Now, if you listen carefully, then you'll get the background, and then I think you'll want to hear the rest of the sermon. The entire book of Hebrews is written exhorting Christian people to keep going forward for God. That's the purpose of the entire book. The apostle is writing the Hebrew Christians, and he's saying, grow in grace. Don't stop. Keep going. And you can wrap the entire book of Hebrews up in this one statement. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Now, that is exactly what all of Hebrews is about. Everything else in Hebrews is trying to get Christian people to run the race faster and run it with patience and lay aside every weight. This afternoon, I turned the television on just for a few minutes, and of all things, there was a track meet on. And I like to watch anytime anybody's trying to beat somebody else in anything, I pick out one pull for him. I can see a couple of kids playing marbles on a vacant lot. They don't play marbles much anymore. We used to play when I was a kid. I mean, I hated some oocher. Huh? Ever play marbles? And you hit the guy with ooch twally. You ignorant folks don't know what that's about. But we used to keep marbles. And boy, I had a few agates one time. Remember that? No, not maggots. Agates. And that's a Greek word that you'll never understand, most of you that live in this generation of motorcycles and expensive toys. But anyway, anytime I see a couple of kids playing anything on a vacant lot. By the way, I want to stop and say this. I want every teenage couple that's together to move over a little bit, please. There are two or three teenage couples. They're just on the verge of looking like you ought not to be in a parked car. Now, you're not going to neck here. That's for dead sure. And so just move over and behave yourself, and you can make love later after you get married. And you say, you talking to my daughter? Maybe. And if I am, you talk to her when you get home, too, would you please? And fella, you talk to her, by the way. And that's our thought for today. Have some more after a while, but that's our thought for right now. By the way, if you don't like that, then you just figure out some way to lump it the best you can, because you're not going to sit and neck while I'm preaching. By the way, a lot of you have already gotten more than you get in most churches. Right there. So, now then, an agate is a ooching is when you do it like that. But I like athletics, and I saw just a few minutes of a track meet, and they're announcing there's a walk. Did you ever see a walk? That's where they go. And it's really the dumbest looking thing you ever saw. Now, foot race is running, but a walk of all things. And that's like this. But anyway, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's a steeplechase, 440-yard dash. I don't care what it is. A turtle race or a rooster fight. I don't care. I just pick out one and start pulling for the one. Now, the Apostle Paul is likening the Christian life to a race. Now, he said Jesus is the author and finisher. That means he's the starter of the race, and he's also the timer at the end of the race. He's the one that pulls the trigger on the gun that starts the race. He's the one that pushes the button on the watch to time the finish. He's also the one to whom we look as we run. He's the author and finisher of our faith. Now, the entire book of Hebrews is wrapped up in the apostle trying to encourage us to keep running the race. Notice it says, let us run. Now, that word run means a bit more than just to run. Doesn't mean trot, doesn't mean lope, doesn't mean jog. It comes from a word which means to stretch. Did you ever see a race, and almost always this is true in the 100-yard dash, when they get right to the finish line, they go out like that, they stretch to be the first one, and sometimes the fellow even fall over the finish line to break the tape first. And what the apostle is saying is, let us stretch. Let us run faster. Now, it doesn't mean let us be patient in running. The average person thinks that means let us run with patience. It means let us just sort of jog along and don't get excited. Don't try. No, it doesn't mean that at all. It means run as fast as you can. If you don't win the race, try again. It means keep on trying. Be ye not weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not. Patience in the Bible is never teaching us not to get excited, not to run fast. It means if you run as fast as you can, do the best you can, leave the results in God's hands, but be sure you run as fast as you can. So, there are two great admonitions in Hebrews. One is, because of the greatness of salvation, so great is our salvation, then run the race that is set before you. And the second admonition is, because of so great a cloud of witnesses. Seeing we're compassed about with so great a cloud. The word cloud doesn't imply necessarily multitudes, though it is that. It means they're up high, the cloud of witnesses. Up in the sky, there's a great cloud of witnesses. And they're watching us run the race. Now, seeing we're compassed about, who are these witnesses? Hebrews 12 and 1 and 2 mentions. They're the witnesses of Hebrews chapter 11. In the great faith chapter in Hebrews 11, it talks about by faith, Abel offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. By faith, Enoch walked with God and was not, for God took him. By faith, Abraham left the Ur of the Chaldees to look for a city which had foundations, whose builder and ruler is God. By faith, Moses chose to suffer the affliction of God and esteem the reproach of Christ greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt. By faith, Joseph. By faith, Rahab. By faith, Gideon. By faith, Barak. By faith, Jephthah. By faith, Samson. By faith, David. It goes on to say, by faith, women received their dead to life again. It says that men quenched the violence of fire. Men escaped the sword. They were sown asunder. They were torn asunder. By faith, the people of God. Now, this great list of witnesses, people that used to live, used to serve God, used to suffer, used to sacrifice, used to give, now they're in the grandstand. It likens it to an athletic contest. Here's a fellow who plays football. Let's take Notre Dame, the alumni of Notre Dame, Johnny Lujack. Used to play quarterback. George Connor used to play tackle for the Notre Dame football team. And let's see, who else? Hanratty. Joe? Terry. Terry Hanratty. Boy, if you knew the Bible like you knew your sports, you'd sure be good. And Terry Hanratty. And what's the little scat back they had years ago that's so good? Anyway, homecoming day, and all the old the alumni come back in, and there they sit in the grandstand. They watch the team play. Now, the boys that play on the field now. And here's a young quarterback just breaking in from Notre Dame. They'll have one breaking in this year, taking the place of Theismann. And so here's Joe Theismann back, and he's watching the young quarterback break in. The young quarterback stops and thinks, oh, good night, All-American Theismann's up in the stands watching me. Oh, boy, I better do good. And there's Terry Hanratty. He's up there in the stands watching me. And there's Johnny Lujack, the old quarterback. He's up in the stands watching me. And there's Daryl LaMonica. He's up in the stands watching me. And boy, I'm playing my first game. I better be careful. I better do the best I can. Because up in the grandstand, all the old players that have stood out in days gone by, they're watching me. That's exactly what Paul says. Paul says, you folks, as you serve God, he said, I tried to get you to grow in grace and run the race for Christ because we have so great a salvation. Now he said, if that won't work, he said, run the race because so great a cloud of witnesses. Doesn't mean only a great in number. It means great witnesses. How you know? Great. Abraham was great. He's up there watching us perform tonight. Moses was great. He's up there watching us perform tonight. Isaac was great. He's up there watching us perform tonight. Enoch was great. Abel was great. They're watching us perform tonight. Now, the entire premise is this. Look, as we run the race, people are watching us. So what? Well, this afternoon, I watched this, I think I watched just 5 minutes of it. It seemed like there was the 100-yard dash was on, and some fella ran it in 9 seconds flat. By the way, I beat that one time. A bull got after me down the pasture in East Texas, and I ran the 100-yard dash in about 5.6. But anyway, by the way, I was compassed about. Now, first thing they did, they came and they took off their sweat clothes. They took off the weight. Did you know that some of these fellows practice with heavy shoes? They'll put weights on their shoes, and they'll run all week long with weights on their shoes. And now it's time for the race. What do they do? They lay aside the weights. That's what the Lord says. Now, nothing wrong with the weight. This is not talking about sin. We're not supposed to even run the race with weights. We've got a race to run. I was thinking a while ago. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be speaking, and we'll be dedicating a building for Terry Smith in Longview, Texas. That's 20 miles from where I went to college and where the Grange Hall Baptist Church is located, my first pastor. And, you know, I won't even be going over there. I don't have time. I'm going to fly in. I'll get in the place about 6 o'clock tomorrow night. I'll leave about 9:30. Just have time to go to the service and preach. You think I wouldn't like to see my old alma mater? Sure. You think I wouldn't like to see the church I pastor 20 miles away? Sure. But I don't have time. You see? Don't have time. Why? Because there's much to do. Lay aside. No, you say, well, there wouldn't be anything wrong with that. No, there wouldn't be wrong with that. Except I sort of want to stay in the race. You see? Now you say, well, the house, someday you ought to do that. I'm going to do that someday when the race calls me to run right by it. Now, I'm not against it. I'm saying there are good things. There are good things that we have to lay aside. And the fellas lay aside their weights and lay aside their sweatsuits and the sin. Now, a good runner doesn't run with weights. By the way, I was reading the paper this afternoon. This football player for the Bears, Joe Moore. I think I'm a great football player. And he's bald-headed. He's my favorite player. And he shaves his head every other day. You know why he shaves his head? He said he used to be on the track team. And on the track team, he felt like he wanted to take all the weight he could. And he said he felt like he could run faster with a bald head. By the way, I'm getting faster all the time. And some of you fellas ought to run it 9 flat. You know it? Or 9 rounds. But anyway, he said, I can run faster. What? Without any hair, so he shaves his head so he can run faster. Now then, the weight is that thing that bogs you down. Now the sin. Every track star, he must lay aside the weight, lay aside the suit, and have as little weight as possible. Now then, but he also must be careful about his habits. A fellow shouldn't drink liquor if he's going to be a 100-yard dash man or a mile runner. He's got to watch his habits. Fellow shouldn't smoke cigarettes. It'll cut his wind down, you see. So lay aside the weight and then the sin, which does so easily beset us. Why? Because you're being watched. Paul said, look, he said, like a man who is running a 100-yard dash or a mile run or a 3-mile run or the quarter-mile run or the half-mile run or a relay race. And up in the stands there are people. There's Jesse Owens up there. He used to run. And there's Glenn Cunningham up there. He used to hold the record for the mile at 4:06 years ago. And there's Chuck Finsky and Gene Vinsky, great milers. And there's Roger Bannister, a great miler. And up in the stands, they're watching. And here comes the young milers now, LaCorey and all the others. And here they are. And they stop to say, up in the grandstand, the great ones of the past are up there. And they're watching us. And so let's take off the weights and let's lay aside the weight and get rid of the sin. And let us run. Why? Because the greats, Abraham, Moses, Elijah, Isaac, Jacob, John the Baptist, Peter, Paul, all the greats of God that once ran the race, now they're in the grandstand. They're watching us while we run. Consequently, the apostle admonishes us to run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith. Now, that's what it's all about. I recall when I was 1955, I was 29 years of age. And to save you the mathematics, I'm 44 now. And don't look near that old. But anyway, to save you the mathematics, I'm 44. But I recall when I was 29 years of age, Dr. John Rice was having his sword conferences all around the country. And, he had R.G. Lee and Dr. Bob Jones, Sr., and the great fellows preaching these sword conferences. And one day I got a letter from the Sword of the Lord office, and it said, Dear Brother Hiles, would you mind preaching in a Sword of the Lord conference in Toccoa, Georgia, at the Lake Louise Bible Conference grounds? I couldn't believe it. I thought he'd written the wrong fellow. There I was, 29 years of age, and he wanted me to preach. He said, you'll be sharing the pulpit with Dr. R.G. Lee. R.G. Lee? The greatest pulpiteer and the greatest orator, in my opinion, since William Jennings Bryan. Nobody can use the King's English like R.G. Lee. And R.G. Lee has the most famous sermon of our generation. And that's Payday Someday. You know that. Far and away, the most famous sermon preached in our generation. Payday Someday. Preached it here one night. And it's a classic. And so I wrote back and trembling said, okay, I'll preach on the sword conference. And so they introduced Dr. R.G. Lee, and he preached Payday Someday. And when he got through, they introduced me. And I got to preach, and my sermon never looked so anemic in all of its life. I looked at it, and it looked like it needed some B12 shots. And there was R.G. Lee sitting right over here, and Dr. John Rice sitting right here. And I thought, good night. Here I am, just a kid preacher from Texas, and Dr. R.G. Lee is hearing me preach. Just finished preaching Payday Someday. And I was going to preach on Flat Broke Today or something, you know. There he was over here, and I was scared to death. Dr. Rice, I preached the whole sermon to this crowd right over here. Never looked over. And though I could see the halo, there I was preaching. So great a cloud of witnesses. And I said, Lord, if you ever help me to preach, help me preach now. And why? So great a cloud of witnesses. We were on vacation one time in Texas and went to the Levon Drive Baptist Church in Garland. And so the pastor was gone. And he was just a few years ago. He was gone and had somebody to supply for him. And so he said, what is your name? And I said, my name is Jack Hiles. And when I said that, this young preacher that was supplying, he leaned his head on the pulpit. And I thought, what in the world? And the fellow almost cried. He said, you're Dr. Jack Hiles? I said, yes, I'm Dr. Jack Hiles. Nobody ever was as unhappy to see me. And a lot of folks have been unhappy to see me. And he said to the people, he said, you won't believe it. I'm just a kid preacher. I don't even pastor. I'm just going out supplying. He said, this morning I preached a cross over the other side of Dallas, and guess who was in the audience? Lee Robertson! And now tonight, Jack Hiles! He said, I wish I were dead. After I heard him preach, I wish he'd have died too. But now, he was scared to death. Why? Because Robertson was there that morning, and I was there that night. And the young fella had looked up to us, and he was scared to death, and there he was. So great a cloud of witnesses. And he was scared to death. Now, that's what the apostle said. He said, look, hey, when you run this race, don't forget, there's Elijah up there. He's a pretty good runner. You better run right. Better lay aside your weight, because they're watching. Now, he said, I've been trying to get you to run with patience the race that's set before you because of what I preached on this morning. So great is salvation. Run the race! But now he says, if that doesn't work, so great is the heavenly cloud of witnesses. Run the race. Run the race. Run the race. Grow in grace. Give your best. Don't stop. Come back on Sunday night. Come back on Wednesday night. Give God the tithes and offerings. Be a soul winner. Read your Bible. Live a clean life. Do what you ought to do. Run as fast as you can. Get the job done for God. Build your Sunday school class. Build your department. Get the bus route done. Do the job for God. Do all you can to save the nation. Do all you can to get people saved. Why? Because we have so great a salvation. Because we have so great a cloud of witnesses. Now, basically, here's what it's saying. He's saying, as you give, as you live, as you serve, as you teach, as you sing, as you preach, as you do your job, don't forget, you're being watched. For example, he lists them. He says, well, as you give, say, did you give your tithes today? Or did you rob God? If I were you and I did not give God 10% of my income and I were behind, before I left tonight, I'd come to the church office or I'd call one of the secretaries or come down and see Mrs. Popper and I'd say, I'm not going to leave tonight with God's money in my pocket. You know why? One reason is there are a lot of mighty good givers watching you when you put your money in the collection plate tonight. One of them is listed in the Bible is Jephthah. I won't go into the entire story of Jephthah, but he's one of those listed in the great cloud of witnesses. And God reminds you as you give, Jephthah's watching you. Jephthah promised God that if he would do something for him and help him win the victory, that the first thing that walked through the door when he got home, walked out of the door when he got home, he'd sacrifice it to God as a sacrifice. I'm going to tell you a slide. Well, first thing walked through the door. Well, he thought it'd be maybe a lamb or an oxen. And so God gave him the victory. And Jephthah promised God that the first thing that walked through that door when he got home, he'd offer it to God. And Jephthah comes home and he looks at the door. And what walks through? His lovely daughter. And Jephthah said, oh no. Oh God, what an awful mistake I've made. I promised you the first thing that walked through the door, I'd offer as a sacrifice. But Jephthah kept his promise. I'm not saying, what's your opinion about that? That's up to you. But Jephthah kept his promise. And Jephthah gave his own daughter on the altar of sacrifice to God. That's how much he gave. His own daughter. Say, would you be willing tonight to give your... No, you wouldn't even give a dollar. You wouldn't even give 10% of your income. You rob God. You say, I can't afford to tithe. Say that to Uncle Sam. You have as much a right to say it to Uncle Sam as you do God. More right. God demands, commands, one dime of every dollar you make. It's God's. It's not yours. You say, I can't afford to give it. You don't give it. You're a robber if you keep it. Now, when you rob God, don't forget that Jephthah looks down and says, I gave my daughter, and all you gave was a dollar tonight, or $2, or less than 10% of your income. A great cloud of witnesses. When the collection plates are passed, don't forget, some mighty good givers up there in the cloud of witnesses. You know, here's a fellow, fades back to pass. He's a rookie quarterback for, I say, Notre Dame. Fades back to pass, and he throws the ball. Suddenly it dawns on him, the mighty good throwers up there. There's Joe Theismann, and there's Daryl LaMonica, and there's Terry Hanratty. Mighty good passers up there. He's got to do his best. I've got to play in the tradition of old Notre Dame. I hope they lose all their games. But anyhow, old Notre Dame. I got to play in that tradition. And I've got to do my... I've got a cloud of witnesses. And when you give, decide what you're going to give to God, you better stop and realize that up in the grandstand some mighty big givers. There's Abraham. God said, Abraham, Abraham, I want you to take your son, your only son Isaac, the only son, the son of promise, the only son by Sarah. I want you to go to Mount Moriah. And I want you to offer him there at the place that I will show thee. Abraham said, but dear God, you promised me Isaac. And for 100 years I've waited for this boy. And I even gave up hope. And now as a man 100 and my wife 90, you finally gave me Isaac. And now you want him. I don't understand it. I can't understand it. Why you'd want Isaac. But God says, I want Isaac. Go offer him as a sacrifice. Abraham starts that long 3-day journey toward Mount Moriah. And I said it so often at night. He looked up at the stars one night. He looked up and he saw the stars. And he said, dear God, it's not right. You promised me that as the stars of the heavens, so would my seed be. And now you want to take my only boy, my only hope to be a blessing. You want to take Isaac, the boy of promise. I don't understand it, but I'll let you have him. And the next night, Abraham, as Isaac went off to sleep, Abraham reached out and picked up a handful of the sand of the Judean hills. And it went through his fingers. And Abraham said, dear God, it's not right. You promised me as the sand, the grains of sand, so would my seed be through Isaac. And now you want to take him. I don't understand it, but you want him. You can have him. And up to Mount Moriah, Abraham went. And there was Isaac, his boy of promise. And Abraham's an old man. Doesn't think there's any hope to have any other children. And Isaac is the boy that's going to bless the whole world, God said. Abraham builds an altar, and Isaac looks and says, Father, here's the altar, and here's the wood, but where's the sacrifice? And Abraham looks, and with a tear and a choke in his throat, tear in his eye, Abraham says, God will take care of that. And he puts Isaac on the sacrifice on the altar and binds him up and takes the knife in his hand to reach down and pierce the heart of his own boy and willing to give his own boy. And God said, hold it, Abraham. Look over in the thicket. Abraham said, what do you mean? He said, there's a ram caught in the thicket. I want you to loose Isaac. You think Abraham was happy? Yeah, Isaac was happier, though. Abraham looks down the night, and Abraham says, I'm watching. And so the plates are passed by, and you get that dollar bill, and you roll it up where the one doesn't show, so the usher will think it's a 5 or a 10. You skin flint, you tightwad, you penny pinching, nickel nipping. Kind of Christian, and you wad less than a tithe up and drop it in the collection plate, or you give a little less and you offer it. You know, I watch you how you give. You take it, you know, and you just sort of explode it in there like that. Cover it with your hand, you dirty tightwad, you God robber, you ungrateful Christian. Take the air that God gives you, drink the water God gives you, eat the food God gives you, wear the clothes God gives you, go to a heaven God's preparing for you, enjoy a salvation that's a gift of God, and won't even give him what's already his. What kind? And Abraham looks down from the stand, the grandstands, and says, I can't understand that. When I was playing for the old college down there, I offered my boy. And Isaac looks down. By the way, Isaac, I think, was a grown man, 21 or over, when he was offered. Can you feature Abraham said, Isaac? Son, let's suppose tonight I walked over to Dave. I said, David, guess what? He said, what? I said, I got to take you out here out in Dyer and build an altar there and offer you as a sacrifice. What? Yeah, that's right. Offer you as a sacrifice. And David said, Dad, you sure you got the message loud and clear? I said, yes, son. I got to go out and I'm going to offer you as a sacrifice. And Abraham had to tell Isaac finally that. And Isaac had to volunteer himself to go on that altar. And Isaac looks down and sees you rob God and sees you give less than your all. And Isaac said, I was a pretty good giver. I'm a part of the cloud of witnesses. And yet you rob God. How dare you? What kind of... Listen. All of you, many of you, all of you on the scrubs. Won't even give God what's his. And so as you give, don't forget what Moses gave. Moses was raised in the palace of Egypt. Moses had, by legal right, the right to become the king of all of Egypt. And the great treasures of Egypt for Moses, if he had just said the word. But Moses saw some afflicted people, slaves in Egypt, his own people. And Moses decided to go out and join that little slave crowd and decided the reproach for Christ was greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt. And he endured, the Bible says, as seeing him who is invisible. And Moses turned his back on the treasures of Egypt, the great Egyptian empire in the days of the Ramses emperors. Greatest time of the Egyptian. Go to Egypt today. Go to Cairo and you'll find the great statues all over Cairo of Ramses II. Moses lived in that age. In fact, there are many that think Ramses II was the Pharaoh that knew not Joseph and was the one that held the Israelites in bondage. But Moses said, I'll give it all to be associated with God's outcast and off-breeds and off-scouring of the world. And he's in the grandstand tonight. It just seems the Lord says, look, with Moses who gave everything, and Abraham who offered his son, and Isaac who offered his life, And Jephthah, who gave his own daughter. Don't forget! Give! Because in the grandstand, the great givers who used to play on the team are watching you. Yes, run with patience the race that is set before you. Why? Because we have so great a salvation. But more than that, because so great a cloud of witnesses. But that isn't it. Isn't all. In heaven, on earth, if we play the game here, you face testing. There are folks up there that used to face testing down here, and they watch us. For example, when you go to school and face the temptation, or go to work and have to stand up for what's right, or in your neighborhood have to stand what's right, or in your recreation have to stand for what's right, or wherever you go and mix and mingle with the world, if you have a hard time standing, they laugh at you. Okay, let them laugh. Because a lot of great, great folks have stood the test watching you from the grandstand. Take Daniel. He's listed. It said there are folks in the Hebrews 11 who stopped the mouths of lions. I wonder who that was, Daniel. One day, they tricked the king into giving a decree. They said, anybody that prays to any other god other than the king, anybody that prays to any other god, he'll have to be cast in the den of lions to be killed and eaten by the lions. And Daniel had been used to praying at his window 3 times a day. Now, Daniel could have gone to his closet to pray, but Daniel decided to keep on praying at his window. And Daniel said, okay, if I've got to go to the den of lions, I'll go ahead and go, but I'm not going to quit my prayer time, and I'm not going to leave my window. I'm going to keep on praying as I've always prayed. But they said, for 30 days, anybody that prays, be cast in the den of lions. And Daniel said, I'll do it. Daniel had already stood the test back in the first chapter. He wouldn't eat the king's meat, and he wouldn't drink the king's strong drink. And Daniel said, I'm going to pray. And he did pray. And they took him. By the way, I'm not saying you ought to start praying with your windows open so you can have persecution. I'm just saying if you're praying with your windows open, don't quit. And Daniel prayed, and they put him in the lion's den. Dr. Bill Rice preaches about that. And he said, most people think, Daniel said, well, the Lord will deliver me. I'm not afraid of the lions. Dr. Bill Rice says, and I think he's right. He said, Daniel didn't do that. He said he held his nose and said, here goes old Dan. Boy, oh boy. Wonder which one's going to get my foot first. And wonder how long I'm going to live. Wonder who's going to get my gizzard. And then suddenly, Daniel stood the test. And the lion's mouths were shut. And Daniel used the lion's mane for a pillow that night. And Daniel, who risked his life in the lion's den, looks from heaven tonight and sees you that won't even take a stand in high school. Sees you that won't say no to the high school dances and won't say no to the dope and won't say no to the liquor and won't say no to the drinking crowd and won't say no to the marijuana crowd and won't say no to the smoking crowd and won't say no to the illicit touch of dirty hands trying to steal your decency, young lady, and you yield. For example, some of you young men, boy, I tell you what, if your girl gets any closer to you proportionately in the dark as she does in the light, you're in trouble right soon. I mean, if proportionately it's worse in the car as much as I saw it a while ago, fella, you better get you another girlfriend.
Well, you see, I just don't like what you're saying.
I don't like where you're sitting either. I mean, Daniel says, what do you mean? I went to the lion's den. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego says, what a very idea. Down there in 1971, you won't even stand for God. You won't even dress right. You won't even get your hair cut, you boys. And you won't even have long skirts, you girls, because you're afraid somebody's going to criticize you or think you're a Christian or think you're different. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, we stood. We stood. They put us in the fiery furnace and hit it seven times as hot as it was. And not even the hair of our head was singed. Why? Because we stood up in the grandstand. They want you. Don't you think they bow their head in shame and say, look at those cowards in 1971. God, give us some Daniels tonight. God, give us some Shadrachs and Meshachs and Abednegoes who are willing to stop and realize, look! You say,
Brother Howe, they're at school. They're just, it's embarrassing. They see the way I do.
So does Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, and David, and all John the Baptist who lost his head for God in a platter. They see you too. It's time you got more concerned about heaven than a bunch of kids at school. Stand! Bible says, having done all, stand! Stand up for Jesus, ye soldiers of the cross. Lift high his royal banner. It must not suffer loss from victory unto victory. His army shout. He leads till every foe is vanquished in Christ, his Lord indeed. Stand, stand, stand. Why? The witnesses are watching you. That's why. David looks down and remembers the time he stood against the great giant Goliath and sees you bow, and David turns and I recall one time I was preaching in a little country church. I pastored in Marshall, Texas, out the edge of town, and it was in the college town. And I was only a sophomore in college, and I got called a pastor there. And my faculty members came out. I had more students in my church that came from the Baptist college there than any church in town. I had a little country church out in the country, and I was pastoring students and faculty members where I went to college. I never forget it. Some of the teachers. They'd say, on Sunday, I'd preach. I'd preach awful hard to them, you know. As the fellow said, I'd heal the dead, cast out the sick, and raise the devil, you know. And boy, I'd do that on Sunday. And then on Monday, I'd go to class and sit in my, some of my parishioners would grade my papers. I can still see Shirley Handler saying, Pastor, you didn't do very good. And she'd love to give me a bad grade on Monday because I skinned her hide on Sunday. But, I can recall one night the vice president of our college came out in the service, and I was so nervous. There was a vice president sitting in the college, Dr. Waller Etheridge, and I was preaching. I was preaching on Deborah, and I didn't know much Bible, and I preached on Deborah all the way through, and I didn't know any difference. And every time I mentioned the name Deborah, it's supposed to be Deborah. Every time I mentioned the name Deborah, the vice president would go. And I'd get a little better, and he'd get back with it, and I'd say, and Deborah! And he'd go. Okay. I imagine that's the way David does when he sees you not standing for God. I imagine that's the way Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they see you at school kowtowing to the crowd and giving in to the crowd and dressing like the crowd and afraid to stand and afraid to be different and afraid to be like God wants you to be and afraid folks will criticize you and afraid you'll get persecuted. And I'm sure Daniel bows his head and just like that. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shake their head. Then David says, I fought Goliath. Look at those cowards down there. Look, run with patience the race that is set before you. Why? Because you have such a great salvation. But more than that, a great cloud of witnesses. As you witness for Christ, there's some mighty good witnesses up there too. There's some that stood the test up there as you stand the test. There's some that gave as you give. But there's some who are some great soul winners that watch you as you witness. Don't you think sometimes when you won't witness to your neighbors or won't witness to the folks that live around you or won't witness to those at school and you're ashamed of Jesus, don't you think sometimes Stephen looks down and Stephen says, I got killed because I witnessed. I lost my life. I stood up and told about Jesus in front of the Sanhedrin. And when I got through, I told them that they with wicked hands had crucified the Son of God. And I told them Jesus was the only way. And I told them how to get born again, how to be saved. And they took up stones and cast me outside the city and threw the stones. And there I looked up and saw Jesus standing at the right hand of God. And I said, lay not this sin to their charge. Into thy hands I commend my spirit. And I gave my life. And you won't even witness where you live and where you go to school and where you work. They're watching. They're watching. There are men here tonight who've been working at the same place for 20 years or 15 or 10 and never have witnessed the fellow you work with. Don't you think Stephen shakes his head as he sits in the grandstand? Don't you think he does? A man out in Linfield talked to me, and one of our deacons, that man, he said, I work in Linfield. I said, what department do you work in? And he told me, I said, hey, we have a man who works in that department. He said, who is it? I called his name, young people. I called his name. And he said, is that a fact? He goes to your church? I said, you didn't know? Well, he said, no. He said, I've been working with him for 15 or 20 years. Does he go to church? I said, yes. I didn't tell him he was a deacon here. I was ashamed. What do you mean? You're not fit to be a deacon. What do you mean?
Stephen, who was a deacon, who gave his life, he looks down and says, boy, how the deacons have changed since I graduated.
Shakes his head. Don't forget, deacon, he's up there in the grandstand watching you. You got some mighty illustrious alumni members up there in the grandstand watching you.
Run! Witness! Be faithful! Yield! Stand in the path! Why?
A great cloud of heavenly witnesses. There's Paul and Silas. Everywhere they went, especially Paul, persecuted because he witnessed for Christ. Over and over again, he looks down and sees us afraid to witness, too timid. You know, I'm thanking God for some of our young people. Now, I know that some of the kids are a little bit, I'm sure, a little bit maybe imprudent sometimes or unwise in the way they do it, but I thank God they're willing to do it. I know sometimes they call the police and get the police after our kids because they're witnessing too much. And I know sometimes the kids almost start a riot. And I think they ought to be prudent and careful. But I'll tell you what, I've got more respect for a fellow that does it too much than a fellow that's scared to do it at all. And I'm not going to spend my time trying to calm down those that are too hot. I'm going to spend my time trying to warm up those that are too cold. Now, young folks, I do think you ought to be very careful and very wise and very understanding and very loving when you go out soul winning. And I think when you get a hippie, some of our kids get hippies with the beards and shake them. I think you'll be very careful. You don't pull too hard. But I am saying that I do. Listen, we need some old first century Christianity. We need some of it. They look down from the first century and see us. By the way, as you forgive, also there's some mighty good forgivers up there. I was thinking this afternoon, a lot of folks hate me, but I don't want to hold any grudges against anybody. You know one reason I don't? Because Joseph is watching me all the time. Joseph, God bless Joseph, one of the greatest men in the Bible. Joseph, his father's favorite, wore the coat of many colors. His father sent him on an errand one day out to see his brothers, and his brothers hated him. And they said, we'll kill him, that's what we'll do, we'll kill him. And they were going to kill Joseph, but before they killed him, they thought, well, let's don't kill him, let's just sell him, we can get some money for him. So they sold him for, 20 pieces of silver, I think it was. Maybe it's, I think it's 20. And they sold him. And he was hated by his brothers, but he was sold to the Ishmaelites, and on to Egypt he went. And worked his way up to the second in command, next to the king of Egypt, and was in control of all the food, the commissaries of Egypt. And they had a famine down in the land where his brothers and his dad lived. And they came to Egypt to try to get some food. They came to the fellows in charge. They didn't know it was their brother. And there was Joseph. And they didn't understand it was Joseph. They didn't know him. And there was Joseph standing up before his brothers. He could have starved them to death. They tried to kill him and sold him into slavery. And they would have killed him if they hadn't gotten 20 pieces of silver for his body. And they wanted to kill him. They hate him. But now Joseph sees his brothers. He could have said no, but he didn't. He fed them. He gave them food. What a forgiving spirit. You folks that hold grudges, there's some mighty forgiving folks watching you in the grandstand. You folks that hold bitterness in your heart and
speak unkind words and gossip and get mad and have vindicated spirits and retaliation and so forth. Joseph is watching you, and Joseph says, that's not the way you ought to be. When I played on the grandstand, we forgave. When I played on the grandstand, my brothers tried to kill me, but I rendered good for evil, and I blessed those that cursed me, and I helped those that hated me, and I loved those that tried to kill me. And he's watching tonight. Oh, they're watching, gently watching the great heavenly grandstand. That's one reason why I want to stand. You know, when I got back from World War II, I didn't see any combat. I was a paratrooper, but I was a cadre. How many recall the word cadre, what it means? Training cadre. They were the ones that trained the others. And my outfit went over to Okinawa and Iwo Jima, and many of them were killed there. But I was kept as training cadre. And so when the war was over, all the airborne folks came back and we'd sit around the barracks. And one fellow would say, I want to show you something. He'd say, hit that. I'd say, what's that? He said, it's a plate in there. A plate. I got a plate in my skull. And one fellow would say, see that? I got shrapnel in there. It'll be there the rest of my life. And one fellow would say, see that scar right there? That was from shrapnel from a hand grenade. It got me right there. And one fellow would say, well, he said, see there, I lost a finger, and I lost that in battle. And they look at me and say, well, what you want to say? And I say, well, I got ptomaine poison at the mess hall one time, eating too many potatoes. I was always ashamed. When I get to heaven and see John the Baptist, I don't want John the Baptist to look at me and say, you trimmed your message, you were afraid. I don't want Elijah to say, I stood up against the ministerial association, you wouldn't do it. I don't want Peter and John to say, they told us not to witness, but we said we can't help but speak what we've seen and heard. I don't want them to think I was afraid. Must I be carried to the skies on flowery beds of ease while others fought to win the prize and sail through bloody seas? No, I must fight if I would gain increase my courage, Lord. I'll bear the toil, endure the pain, supported by thy word. One of the men in the dressing room this morning said as I walked up, he said, preacher, that's a nice way of bragging on the message. He said, that was a fair to meddling message this morning. That's pretty good for an old man, something like that. You know, always kidding me, the dirty bums. But anyway, I heard them talking. They didn't know I heard them, but I heard them talking. And one of them said to the other, not many preachers take a stand like that anymore. Not many preachers really take a stand anymore. You know, one of the reasons I want to take a stand, they're watching. There's old Billy Sunday. Boy, don't you think he cries and looks down and sees evangelists nowadays that won't even fight the dirty liquor traffic? Don't you think he looks down and sees pastors afraid of their own shadow and let their deacons and their members and run them and tell them what to do and no prophets and no courage and no conviction and a bunch of churches going to the devil, a bunch of mini-skirted people, girls, and a bunch of long-haired hippie-type boys and folks living in sin and running wild and church closed on Sunday night, no prayer meeting on Wednesday night, no Bible and no stand and no courage and no conviction and no soul winning and no altar call. Don't you think Billy Sunday looks down and says, oh my great cloud of witnesses. So let us run with patience the race that is set before us. And of course, as we go forward for God, we must always be conscious of this grandstand. Did you know? I know the coach. Coach Price knows this is true, and anybody that knows sports knows this is true. The hometown advantage is always worth a lot of points. They say in basketball, it's worth 8 points to play at home. You play on the road, you're 8 points behind before you start. They say in football that the home crowd is usually worth a touchdown. Worth a touchdown. That's why that when the Chicago Bulls played the Los Angeles Lakers, the Lakers beat them 4-3. They won the 4 in Los Angeles. We won the 4 in Chicago. I think that's the way it was. Anyway, be it as it may, the home court advantage is always means a lot. And what the Lord is saying here is the Christian ought to always remember he has the home court advantage. There's a great cloud of witnesses. We can't hear them, but they're there. When the offering plates are passed, Abraham says, I recall what I gave. I gave my boy. Isaac says, I know what I gave. I gave my life. Jephthah says, I know what I gave. I gave my daughter. Never forget that day. I gave my daughter. And look at the Christians. playing now. Look at them. The old-timers oftentimes say that the youngsters aren't as good players as the old-timers used to be. Personally, I don't think that's right. Because in the sports where you go against time, they're still breaking all the records, and I think the athletes now are better than the athletes used to be. But the old-timers look down and sometimes say they're not as well-conditioned. I think that's true sometimes. Not as well-conditioned. And they're a little ashamed. Ted Williams looks and sees a fellow playing around, doesn't try to hit right, and doesn't follow the rules, and everybody swings for the fences, and nobody's concerned about the hit and run. Nobody's concerned about hitting the ball to right field and advancing the fellow to third base from first. Nobody's concerned about learning how to bunt. Nobody's concerned about taking the extra base. Nobody's concerned about learning what base to throw to. And they shake their heads and say, it's not like it used to be, as they sit in the grandstand. But tonight, they are in the grandstand, and they watch. So great a cloud of witnesses. Let me ask you a question. How's your giving? How's your performance? How's your stand for God been? How's your soul winning and witnessing been? How's your marching orders been? Have you been running with patience the race that is set before you? Now, listen again. And I close. The race that is set before you. Now, follow me. In any race that is 440 or less, that means one quarter of a mile, one usually out an outdoor track, once around the track, you stay in your own lane. Your own lane. Now in the 880 or in the mile, you start off another lane, but after you get to a certain place, you can cut over and get in front and next to the inside track. But not so in the 440. Or the 220, or the 100-yard dash, or the 120-yard high hurdles, or the 200-yard low hurdles, or the 400-meter hurdle race. You stay in your own lane. You can forfeit the race if you get out of your own lane. Everybody has his own lane to stay in. And so, Paul says there's a race set before you. The will of God for your life. What God wants you to do, it's all set before you. Now, Paul said, don't look back. Did you know fellows have lost the race because they look back at the last few seconds? They're running, and they're ahead. They want to see how far ahead. They look back and lose their equilibrium. Equilibrium is a Greek word for balance. And lose their equilibrium, and what happens? They stumble, or they lose their equilibrium, and they don't win the race. Paul said, keep your eye on Jesus. Keep it focused on Jesus. He's the author, the beginner, and finisher of our faith. But he says, as you run, run fast. Press. Throw your chest out. Strain your stomach. Run as fast as you can. Give all you can. Lay aside your weight. The sin, put it aside. And run with patience. The race, stay in your lane. Don't get out of the will of God. Don't veer to the right or the left. Don't get out of God's will. Just keep on running with patience the race that is set before you. Now, that's what God wants you to do. Two reasons. We have so great a salvation. And we have so great a cloud of witnesses. Some of you don't even belong to a church that takes a stand for the Bible. Folks right here tonight belong to churches, the National Council of the Churches. Aren't you an Elijah? Some of you tonight belong to churches that hold membership in the Communist National Council of Churches. Won't you go down with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Aren't you a Daniel? Others of you never witnessed to anybody. Others of you owed God thousands of dollars in tithes. Others of you don't even come to church on Wednesday night. What kind of Christianity is that? We got some young people tonight drinking liquor, sipping cocktails. God pity that kind of cowardly, yellow spine Christianity. Well, it's just a little hard where I go to college. Okay, then take a stand or get out of the college. What do you mean? Your mom and dad deserve more than that. Some broken-hearted parents because of you cowardly, yellow spine. Call yourself a man and can't even say no to a bottle of beer or a cocktail. You're a sissy. I'll show you I'm a sissy. I'll meet you in the alley. Yeah, and I'll show you are a sissy too. Coward. Take a stand. Live right.
Mom and Dad trying to make something out of you. And you betray all they've trained you, all the pastors taught you, and all the teachers have invested in you. Stand up!
Take a stand. Why? Great cloud of heavenly witnesses. They're watching. How about you? How's the race? How are you running? Are they shaking their head? Let us pray. Father, two reasons thou hast given us why we ought to run the race, because of so great salvation and so great a cloud of witnesses. Help us to lay aside the weight, the sin, and to run with patience the race that is set before us. Help the folks to stand at home, on the job, at school, and at play. Help us to stay in our Bibles. Help us to witness. Help us to give. Help us to give, knowing that Abraham and Isaac and Jephthah are watching. Help us to stand the test, knowing that Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are watching. Help us to preach aright, knowing that John the Baptist and Elijah and Paul are watching. Help us to win souls, knowing that Stephen and Paul and Silas are watching. So great a cloud of witnesses. Our heads are bowed in prayer and our eyes are closed. Christians, how many would say, Brother Hiles, I'm afraid I'm making the witnesses ashamed. I'm afraid they're not given or stood or witnessed like I should. And I'm afraid the witnesses are somewhat ashamed. I'm afraid the grandstand isn't pleased with my performance. Would you lift your hand, please, all over the house, all over the house, all over the building. Father, bless these dear ones. Now our heads are bowed. If you need to come to the altar and pray, the altar's open for you. You come ahead. But many of you, that means you ought to join a church like this. You ought to join a church that's taking a stand, getting out in the front and getting shot at and being willing to be different. Because I know we're criticized. I know folks hate us. Well, of course. That's a part of it.